Vectus Radio podcasts are sponsored by Break the Cycle CIC, rebuilding self-esteem in people who have experienced domestic abuse. For more, email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk.
We've got Dr. Alex Freeman in the studio. Don't worry, Debbie, he's not a proper doctor.
Yeah, I'm not actually a doctor. I lost my medical license for unknown reasons. It's redacted.
All right. So Alex is here. He's normally at school, but he's decided to come in because we heard you was coming. And welcome, by the way. It's nice
Thank
to have you,
you
back.
Ian. It's really good to be here.
Ah, good. And just tell us and the listener what it is you do, because you're a counsellor, but you're not an ordinary counsellor, are you?
To be fair, I think a lot of people would say I've never been an ordinary counsellor, to be honest. Things have changed quite dramatically for this girl. I am now the Cabinet Member for Children's Services, Education and Lifelong Skills, which is adult community learning.
Right.
And a lot of authorities actually divide those up. But depending on which way you look at it, I think I'm incredibly fortunate because I've got the whole shebang.
Do you know what? Yeah, I think you're right. And I thought about this the other day. At the moment, there is a lot of focus on young people for obvious reasons. I mean, there should be anyway, but even more so because of the pandemic and how we dealt with it and how young people are dealing with it. And in some cases, we're going to find out because we've got a young person here. And you can see that he's wearing gloves. And you can see that there is a mask not too far from his chin as well. He's got grave concerns. Are you concerned with yesterday's announcements?
I am concerned. And the thing is that, again, having responsibility for both children's services and education allows me to actually look at the bigger picture. And I think that's really important because the element of our young people's mental health and well-being is absolutely vital to their education. So I think it's really important that we actually look at it with, you know, in the round, so to speak. And I'll be really interested to hear from Alex's perspective.
He's got loads of questions. Well, was yesterday's decision the right decision?
I think time will tell on that one.
Bit of a risk. Just say, for instance, you know, can you say, here, hang on a minute, because we have. Well, I'll tell you what our stance is from a radio station's point of view. We're still going to have, come Thursday, you'll still come in, sanitise, sign in, and there'll still be screens up. We're taking it seriously. It ain't gone. Regardless of what we said yesterday, we do understand we've got to take a gigantic step. That's just a few people that are popping into a radio station over the course of a week. With schools, you've got hundreds, and in some cases, 1,500 people going into a school, going into the unknown, dangerous area. As at some point, can you say, hang on, you might have made that decision, but I don't agree with it. And can you not say, hang on a minute, we need to put our own restrictions in place?
Well, as we've known, there's been a call out, especially from teachers' unions, to actually not go ahead with that decision. But I think from my perspective, the way I see it, I don't think we will ever, this generation and coming through, will ever go back to how things were before. I think it has heightened our awareness of how these things, you know, can be. And it's very much about how we live with it. But what I do think is I think now we've got to a point where it should be a personal decision. I think head teachers and senior leadership teams within the schools should be able to set their own...
Can they?
Well, that's the point, that they should be given the tools that they need to actually set whatever risk assessments and whatever measures that they want to put in place, because ultimately it's down to the head teachers and the teachers to actually keep those their young people
safe. Can they though? Because let's be honest, and this is no disrespect to them or you, I look at the situation, take a step back. For months and months and months, the Isle of Wight was leading the way. The numbers were low. All of a sudden, the Omicron variant comes along, and all of a sudden, the numbers have gone up. The figures are there for all to see between 10 and 14-year-olds. They're high. So whatever it is that we were doing, whether it be hampered, whether not being able to do enough because you're told what to do, I look at that and think, high time we said, hang on a minute, you've put this in place. It doesn't work here. It might work elsewhere, but it doesn't work here. We need to try a different approach. So are we in a position over the next couple of weeks? You know, I was going to start off by saying, how difficult is it to do this in 2 days? Thanks, Boris. That's given everybody a long time to sort things out. But let's be honest. Can we put something else in place? Can we say to the government, sorry, we've got high numbers. We need a different approach. See what you're saying, but we will take a step, but when it's right.
Government have said all the way along, although there is some question over this, that they've always been led by the science. And I think that hasn't actually changed. And as you've said, the data coming through is telling us that the, you know, that we are still not out of the woods. But it's the actual demographic, I think now, in terms of our vulnerable being triple boosted, they're talking about, for the vulnerable, having another spring booster. I think it's shifted, hasn't it? So the demographic has very much shifted. And also, within primary school children, the numbers within primary schools. But of course, it's not just the children that are affected, it's the teachers as well.
Definitely.
Those numbers have gone up. So I think our focus needs to change, and government need to recognise that, and they need to give schools the tools that they need to effectively manage it. It's all very well saying, oh yes, but the symptoms aren't as severe. If a child has to take time out of school, that's going to affect their education, even with remote learning, which the teachers have been absolutely brilliant with. But if a teacher then has to take time out, then that has even more of an impact. Stopping self-isolation, I really do question that, because it just keeps it in the system.
I've got a question for you. If you just say, for instance, if you personally could make the rules, would you change what you're doing now?
Personally, I wouldn't. But what concerns me is that what I'm currently doing, I might not be able to do in the weeks to come. For example, I'm taking LFT tests. They're going to be stopping. It's going to be much harder to actually get those. Those kind of measures, I think we should still be making things like LFT tests available. I do think there is still an argument for a reduced period of self-isolation. I don't think it should necessarily be put upon the person. I think all along, to be fair, we've had guidance, but that's exactly what it was.
But you wouldn't
was
change
guidance,
anything.
It wasn't clear.
Even though the numbers are going up, you wouldn't change anything.
In what I'm currently doing?
Yeah.
But what I'm currently doing, I think,
not
is...
you personally, I mean for the schools. You're overseeing
the
schools.
You said personally, so...
No,
I
mean, what would you do?
In terms of the schools, schools have been provided directly with LFT tests. Schools have had the facility to actually divide classes into bubbles. I would say to the schools, I think it should, as I said, I think it should be down to the schools, to the head teachers, of how they want to manage it, but to be given those tools. So I think LFT should still be being delivered to those schools. But I think we should look very carefully at the demographic. I also think, in terms of vaccination for the 12-year-olds and above, one of the things that concerned me when the guidance first came out is the issue of consent. Our young people, we're trying to give them a voice, we're trying to make them independent, but it wasn't clear, actually, whether parental consent was needed. So I think that there are still issues for me that need to be ironed out, but I would not be just withdrawing everything and more or less saying, you're on your own.
Personally, I mean, I look at, and this is, again, I make the point, no, this is no disrespect to you and every single school on the island. I think, you know, during the last 2 years, I think teachers have gone above and beyond. They really have. And I think they've been badly treated in some cases, where they've been last to get vaccines and so on, and yet they're working on the front line and putting themselves in danger. I still look at the situation and think the numbers are going up. Whatever it is we're doing, it's not working. We used to have the lowest figures in the country. Now we've got the highest figures. So we have to change. Now, we're bringing Alex now and say, why do you think the numbers are high? And what would you do as a 16-year-old in a busy school? What would you do to change?
Well, personally, I feel like the reason the cases are so high is because of the amount of space there is between a lot of the students. For example, I'm not sure how it's like in other schools, but in my school, Carisbrough College, you have three floors. You have ground floor, first floor, and second floor. And my specific problem is with the first floor, because that is where the sciences and the maths are, and those are the mandatory subjects, and they have the biggest class population. The problem isn't, you know, the lessons themselves, but it's migration to and from other lessons. When you have these big sort of crowds coming out of these classrooms and sort of just blending into each other just to make this one massive traffic jam, in essentiality, of you know, just pupils, you know, it's chaos because everyone's breathing in each other's faces. You know, you can't go anywhere. The social distancing's been completely ignored. Well, not ignored, but it's literally impossible. I think, you know, personally, I changed this by I think there was this thing they did earlier on in the pandemic. They had it so that when you left, one side, the left side, would go up that way. I forget this is in a video. one side would go north and the other side would go south. So you had, like, you know, the front stairs.
One-way system.
Yeah, one-way system, yeah. Basically. And it worked because you had, you know, the left side classrooms going up that way and the right side classrooms going down that way, and you know, you had supervision, and it was definitely helped preventing the spread a lot. But that's just my two pennies.
That's gone. You don't do that anymore.
No.
Now it's a free-for-all.
It's a free, yeah, that perfect analogy. Is that the right word?
Something like that, yeah.
English isn't my strong suit. But yeah, that basically, yeah, it's a free-for-all.
You must have heard that before.
Yeah, I think Alex makes a very valid point. And the schools were very quick to actually draw up the risk assessments for bubbles, for exactly what Alex was saying, to actually minimise. I think it's a balance, though, isn't it? Because the social interaction, I think you'll agree, Alex, is an absolutely essential part of school life. But I think it's how you manage that. And I think when the schools were actually in bubbles, and like Alex said, it was actually more controlled, I think that was a really good model to follow. But it also brings up the bigger picture of our school buildings. And that's something I'm really focusing on at the moment, because I've got a programme of going around visiting schools, and it's more and more evident that actually the school environment in general plays a huge part, I'm sure you'll agree, Alex, in the sort of well-being of the young people and the students. If you're actually saying to if we're saying to our young people, you've got this, you know, dilapidated old building and the roof leaks and the wind blows through the windows, we think that's good enough for you. What kind of message is that putting out? And we have actually got a really good team, and we are investing in our schools and rebuilding. For example, we've got the build is well underway for the Yarmouth, New Yarmouth School on the All Saints side.
Will they be looking at that and thinking they've got to build this with a pandemic in mind, where they've got to give extra space and ventilation? Because these are the things that we need to be thinking about. I mean, I'll just chuck something at you. I mean, you know, are you a groundbreaker, or are you somebody that just goes along with stuff? Hopefully you're a groundbreaker and you can do something. Because I've got two things that are really bugging me at the moment. Okay, one is youngsters don't get a voice in all of this, and they're not. They're just being forced upon. You can see a young man there, decent young man, he's intelligent, he's fearful. Okay, who's listening to him? Hopefully you are. And hopefully you'll be able to make a difference. I look at it, two things that really annoy me at the moment. We've got this herd mentality where we shove 1,000 kids. How many kids go to Carisbrook? Do we know?
Oh, definitely a lot. I don't know the exact number, but...
Okay, just say, for instance, if you've got 800, 700 kids that go there, if you've got, I don't know, 1,100 kids that go to Medina. Now, we all know, we grew up with maybe working, the theory of we're going to work in a factory. So we're going to work in a factory when we leave school, we're going to be having a lot of people around us. Those days are gone. We don't have factories that big anymore. So why do we need schools that big? Why do we feel the need to shove 800 kids together when they know that they're going to get colds, coughs, COVID and all that kind of stuff? And you just think, why aren't we changing things? You know, the idiot that came up with the idea, and I say idiot, sorry, years ago, right, we're going to do away with all these smaller schools and we're going to put them all into one school. I'm sorry. But now that's come back to bite you on the backside, because there's nothing we can do about it now. But my point is, just going back to it so we get it, why are we shoving 800 kids into one school, knowing full well that they're going to get all sorts of stuff, problems and so on? The only idea is that we're going to get them ready for working in a factory that we might have 300 people, or it might have 30, or it might have 40 and so on. I just think we need to change, we need to modernise. The other thing is, I wonder if we could ask him now, exams, he hasn't had any exams yet, but when we do those exams, they're in conditions, hot conditions. Why do we always do them at the hottest days of the year? How are you going to get somebody to react in a brilliant way when they're hot in a stuffy room with 100 other people? These are things that need to modernise. These are things that need to change. And over the last couple of years, we've had an opportunity. You know, COVID has given us the opportunity. We've now learning from home. All right, it might not be ideal, but we can fine-tune it and make it better. But we've done it, and we've come out the other side, and we've learned. And all that's going to happen is we're going to go back, and we're going to do the same old stuff again.
Okay, if I can pick up on that, I think there were actually three questions there.
Oh, there's lots.
Rather than two.
Lots.
At least
count.
Three. At
See,
least three.
Was never my strong point.
Going back to the first point, I don't just go along with what I'm given.
Good.
The great thing about being an independent, not to make this political, but we have set out very clearly our corporate plan, and we have objectives that don't necessarily fit with any... We are not a political party, so we set our own agenda, and it's very much an agenda that we think will work, we know will work for the island. In terms of young people's voice, I would agree with you. And one of the first things that we did, we actually... Two things. We changed the standard template that all papers come through to the Isle of Wight Council in two ways. One, we actually put in that where we have public questions, I wanted to see in there questions from our young people. So we've actually got a specific time in the meeting for our young people to come forward and ask the questions that are important to them, because we do want to hear, it's vital that we hear young people's voices. The other thing that we did with the template is we actually included, which hadn't been before, what will be the impact of this decision, if it's agreed, on our young people. And I think that's absolutely vital for every decision that goes through. What will the impact be on future generations? Because there are impacts on that. In terms of larger schools, the biggest problem that we have is the school funding formula. The way that the school funding formula is it's a certain amount, and they have just gone up slightly, per pupil. So the funding goes with the pupil. So the economies of scale make it more viable, because of the way the funding is, to have the larger schools. That said, I think that there is a model that can work for smaller schools, and that's something that, we are looking into. But the difficulty we have is the way that the funding is, it goes with the pupil. And it's a government...
That needs to change too,
it
then.
It does absolutely need to change.
Let me just chuck something else at you, because this is... I meet a lot of young people, and they tell me what they think. And if they don't, I ask them. Because I think we should be asking more kids what they think. You know, I've said to Alex a couple of times this morning, you know, apologies for messing the world up. Us grown-ups did that, not you youngsters. You've got to try and fix it. That's the way it is. 12-year-old came to me the other week and said... I said to him, where were you last week? And he said, I was off with COVID. And I said, you're back now, you're okay, you're well? He said, yeah. And I said, you okay? No, I'm not. I've had to go back to the place that gave me COVID. How do you think I feel? And there's no answer to that. But we still keep shoving people into areas where they're getting COVID. And we're not doing anything about it. We're just ignoring the problem.
I wouldn't say that we're not doing anything about it. There is a raft of help and support available for young people. We know that young people are very anxious. I talk to a lot of young people, and we do hear that there is that anxiety. I completely agree with you. There is support out there, but what I would say, it's not enough. And there are lessons to be learned coming out of the pandemic, and I, for one, am not going to accept that we are trying... We cannot turn the clock back.
Do you know what I need?
We have to accept that we are in a different place now.
Yeah, what I need to hear from you, Debbie Andre, is right. Boris, you've made that decision, but we don't agree with you, and I'm sorry, but we are going to give the strength back to each individual schools so they can put their own rules and regulations in place. Surely that's something we've got to try. Because let's be honest, if you've got a school that is currently has high numbers, I'm not going to point the finger at any school, it's not their fault. They've had to use these rules and regs, and putting them in place hasn't worked. We're the
lowest. Do you know, at one point, the rules and regulations were changing so frequently that we actually had head teachers coming to us and saying,
yeah, I don't doubt it.
We you know, last week it was this week it's something else, and we anticipate next week it'll be something else. But that's what I said, you know, at the beginning. We've got to a point now where government need to actually recognise heads and teachers as the professionals that they are. They have proved themselves, I think, beyond all reasonable doubt, that they are the best people to be able to plan and to handle these situations. But as I say, the responsibility rests with them. So give them, government, give them the tools.
Definitely.
And the way to do that is to lobby, I think, through the local government association.
Let's do it then. Because to me, that's just common sense. It's all very well for other places to say, no, it's all right. No, our numbers are high. You've got young people that are scared. That's not right. I wouldn't say he's terrified. He's not going to show you that. But I guarantee he's uncomfortable. And other people have been in this building uncomfortable. They tell us the stories. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of it out there. And we go on about, you know, mental health. We have to look out for these young people. If they're still being herded into an area where there are numerous people and not the ventilation they're promised, we're just going to have the same problem.
I think the important thing here, though, as well, is, yes, we have a lot of young people with high levels of anxiety, but let's not forget, we've got teachers and heads, and their level of anxiety has gone up as well. So yeah, it really is a big problem. And when you have wicked issues like this, you need to find new solutions. Mm. You can't just keep on doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
No, but you do. I mean, just say, for instance, now, if we said, Debbie Andre, you can run the schools. You can give them the power. You would give them the power.
Absolutely.
And if, just say, for instance, a particular school came to you and said, I'm sorry, but we're in instances that Alex has described where they're leaving the classroom and they're going into crowds of others, you put a mask on, you wouldn't have a problem with that.
Absolutely not.
Because it's common sense, isn't it? There is a story.
But I think it's important to say, as Alex said, those measures were in place. The schools reacted. The teachers, the heads, the senior leadership teams reacted brilliantly. Mm. And they actually... So we're not reinventing the wheel in terms of putting those restrictions in and knowing what actually works, because it did work to keep the numbers down, as
exactly.
You said, the numbers are going up. So it's not that we haven't got those measures. But in terms of anxiety, I think the schools in general have been very sympathetic. I think teachers have reacted really well. And I know that now that remote learning has become, it's not the answer to everything, but teachers are able now to actually, students that stay at home because of high levels of anxiety of going in are still able to actually access work, which I think is really important. So the actual lagging behind, I think you'll agree, students are actually able to keep up. Obviously, I'm talking more secondary level, but of course, even at primary level, the remote learning was engaging, and it still allowed those children to sort of keep in touch with friends, even though it wasn't ideal because it was online. So we still have those tools that we can use. So let's use them.
What's your thoughts, Alex? Are you feeling any better? Are you feeling more comfortable?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've had some concerns I've had put to rest.
That's good. That's good. That's a positive. I mean, you've told me a story once that you were in a classroom, and there weren't too many other people in the classroom, and then things changed, and you got put into another classroom, and you used to sit at the back. Tell me if you want to stop me saying this, because this is a story that you told me a while ago, and it's really down to you whether I tell it or not. Maybe you ought to, if you want to.
Oh, well, to give a quick recap, basically, you know, I had this, you know, this nice little table, I think it was in science, I think, you know, away from people, as I like it, because I have about, like, what, two friends that currently go to school, all my other friends have left, so, you know, just me, and then, you know, it's fine, you know, but, you know, all of a sudden I get thrown into the mix with, like, all these other people, and I, you know, it's just, you know, I thought, you know, I've said multiple times, you know, oh yeah, I've got a brother who's shielding, you know, of course I wear a mask and gloves at school as well, I take even more precautions at school than I do here. And, you know, you'd think, oh, okay, he's wearing a mask and gloves, probably means he's got somebody shielding or shielding himself, okay, let's keep him away from, you know, these people for the time being, because, you know, these people are off regularly, and so, you know, if we give, like, you know, this person who's very obviously got somebody shielding a COVID, then that could give the person who's shielding COVID, and, you know, it's, of course, you know, it's a tough situation. I mean, you know, it's like, I'm saying, like, okay, you need to keep me alone, like, forever, and, like, keep me away from, like, literally everyone, put me in, like, a giant hamster ball, and, like, a hazmat suit, but just, like, a little sort of, you know.
What happened, Alex? Cut to the chase. What happened? Tell me what happened.
Okay, so basically, I got moved. And I hated it. I still hate it. I'm still in the same place that I got moved to. And I've had a couple of close calls of COVID. I've had at least two this year. I've been lucky in that I haven't got it. But still, close calls.
Can I ask, are you vaccinated, Alex?
Yeah.
And was that your choice to be vaccinated?
Yeah.
Again, you raise a really, really valid point, is that, yes, it's about personal responsibility, but it's also about unseen. So you can see somebody with a mask and wearing gloves, and there's different conclusions that you could draw from that. You could draw a high level of anxiety, but I wouldn't necessarily think that somebody was doing that for somebody else. And I think that's a really valid point, because it's not just about ourselves, is it? It's
no.
about our own, everybody's situation is going to be personal to them and how they handle it. Can I ask you a question, Alex? Do you think, because of the pandemic, as a society, we have become more aware of the needs of others? Or do you think, how do we sit with that?
I mean, I'd like to think so. Of course, you do see it, you know, from time to time. But again, you also do see a lot of, as my mum would put it, selfishness. You know, you get a lot of people, you go into the shops, you'll see like everybody just like sort of crowding around, like, you know, no mask, no gloves, nothing, you know. I've had like multiple times, I was in the shops yesterday, and I just get people like come right up next to me, so I've had to move away. Like, I've got mask on, surely you'd think, okay, maybe they just want to be left alone, or, you know, have the patience. I mean, it's a British unwritten rule, okay, that you always, like, I always do this, I don't know if it's true for anyone else, but if somebody's at the aisle you want to get to, you look at something else, like, oh yes, this yogurt looks nice, you read the back of the ingredients until they leave, and then you go over there, you know.
Yeah,
you don't just like shove yourself in and then expect them to move.
So what would you say to the anti-vaxxers?
Oh, I'd probably get taken off air of a dick. So,
right, we can guess then. So. Yeah. So, I mean, there's one thing to come out of the last 5 minutes, and that is, if you're out there and you're not wearing a mask, that's fine, that's your choice. If someone else is wearing a mask, they may even be wearing gloves as well, but if they are wearing a mask, don't take the mickey. Don't diss what
respect
they're trying to...
Respect it.
Respect it. Do what's necessary. They may not have COVID, they may not have a cold, they may not be in a situation where they're not bothered about themselves, they're keeping families safe that may be vulnerable. It may be as simple as that, but the long and short of it is, if someone's wearing a mask, respect it. That's all you need to do.
And I think it's interesting that that's actually come from our young person here today.
I think we should talk to more young people. I think we should, and that's what we love to do. You know, we give people a voice, because I didn't hear in any of Boris Johnson's speech yesterday a thought for any youngster, anybody going to school at the moment. There was nothing for them. They didn't matter. They don't count. And when you've got people that are then told, this is what you've got to do, and, you know, again, they don't count, they don't matter, that's a sad state of affairs. These are the young people that we're going to invest in. And, you know, I think the least we can do is keep them safe and put them into an environment that is safe. And somebody brought up a question yesterday about the ventilation in schools. How's our ventilation doing on the island? Is that a costly thing?
It varies from school to school, but of course that was another promise from government, that they were going to supply the equipment needed for the ventilation. That hasn't happened, and it's been left again to teachers and head teachers to actually open windows.
I think that the people that have been doing the jobs for the last couple of years and beyond, I just think have gone above and beyond. Teachers, nurses, they've been badly treated, I think, in the last 2 years. I think it's incredibly short-sighted, and it's high time that maybe people stood up for them. You know, so they got what they need so that they can do the job and they can keep young people safe. Now, I bet you're glad we're talking about this and not that other subject that's top of the list. Do you want to? Don't look like that.
I would just like to say, though, going on from what you were just saying, is that even pre-pandemic, there was a national recruitment problem with teachers.
I'm not surprised.
And as a result of this, we are seeing teachers leave the profession. And we've got to reverse that trend.
Yeah.
So we've got to do everything we can to support teachers. Alex, I'd like to ask you, you're year 11, so you're going to be taking exams. How do you feel about that? Do you feel prepared?
Well, no, but that's not the school's fault. That is me. I'm not the brightest. I don't have the best grades. I'll admit that. So, you know, I'm hopeless personally, but that's nothing to do with like the school or COVID or anything. That's just me.
So you don't think the pandemic has affected?
I mean, it's definitely affected it. Mm. Especially for year 10. I don't know what happened. Year 9, I'd hate to toot my own horn, but I was top of the class, you know. I was in set 1 for basically everything except maths. Year 10 comes on, that's when the pandemic hits. Whole thing gone.
There's so many people, I would imagine, Alex, are in that same boat.
Do you think it will affect your life choices going forward? So in terms of what your next steps are, and I'd like to hear what you feel your next steps will be. Will you go to college? Will you try an apprenticeship? Do you even know at this point?
I'm hoping to get into sixth form, hopefully. I mean, you know, I have people at Carisbrook pulling some strings for me, you know. Wait, that sounds a bit criminal. Let me rephrase that.
It's the feeder school for the sixth form, so right. I think that's quite a
can
legitimate
you pull a few strings
request.
For him? Can you do
what subjects,
of
Alex?
Well, biology, definitely. I'm
Is that because of your love of reptiles you were telling me earlier?
my very, very niche interests. I hate having niche interests. Because, you know, I've had this very awkward, niche interest thing, you know, when I was
Do you not think, sorry, do you not think, though, that niche interests are things that could actually develop into a very worthwhile career? Because things that we are actually interested in always, you know, you always excel more if you're engaged and you're interested. So do you see a future for your niche interests in actually employment?
I mean, well, I do suppose so, maybe. If I've been thinking a lot, maybe, have I started out my own sort of like reptile business on the island, because there isn't all too many things to do with reptiles on the island. I think, you know, it'd be nice to have that extra bit of variety, but there's a lot of things I'd have to learn about, things I don't even know about. I'd have to think about businesses, management, all that stuff, which I'm terrible at. I have backups for my backups, basically. If the whole biology thing doesn't work out, then I'll rely on media studies from what I've learned here at Vectis Radio and the 4Ps Project. If that doesn't work out, maybe I'll get into acting. I quite like acting. That's fun. Voice acting is a career that's growing. I mean, you can even make a lot of money off of just sitting down and playing games and streaming it. I don't want to do that, though. I want to be out there, sort of in the field, or not in the field, but.
So you'll be fine, Alex.
It sounds like you've got a pretty good plan worked out.
Well, that's provided if I get my grades right. But I think I have more skull than brain, so that's not going to work out.
Hey, look, I'm sure that's not the case. You'll be fine. We can't let you go without discussing that hot topic, because otherwise people will say, oh, you went easy on it, didn't you? So people are saying we haven't felt listened to. Governors slammed the council over Chillerton and Rookley school decision. What can you tell us about that? Is there anything else you want to say about it?
What I can say, and it picks up on something that we were saying earlier, that we need to get, it's a bigger picture. It's about strategic place planning for the island. It's about changing that funding formula. It's about making sure that I make the right decisions, the tough decisions. And it is about listening to people. There were calls from various different groups to defer that decision. I'm doing further research into all the options.
What does a defer mean? Does someone else make the decision?
No. It means that at the time that the recommendation was going to be made through Cabinet, there was more information that I felt needed to be looked into. But I think we need to be clear here. It's a Cabinet decision. I make a recommendation. We have a very strong Cabinet team, and that goes across the piece. We all have really difficult decisions that we need to make, and it's not down to one person. But I have to be sure. These are our young people's lives. These are teachers' lives. I have to be sure that I am making the right decision. But it's a collective through the Cabinet. We've got some extremely experienced members there, as you know. We're a very strong Cabinet. And so deferring it was just giving more time to actually get the information needed so that I know when I make the final recommendation that it will be one that I can stand behind and I can say I have looked at every possible option. Nobody ever wants to have to close a school, and I need to be sure that I have explored all the other options
We're running out of time, but I mean, you've been accused of not listening. So what would you say to that?
I think it's very much the opposite. I am listening to all the groups, and as you can imagine, I'm being lobbied. And again, it's about that balance. But I need to be sure that I have listened to everyone and that I've got the information that I need to make that final recommendation.
Sure. Can we expect a decision when?
We are working through. I'm well aware. I am not indifferent to the situation that the teachers and the governing board of Chillerton Rookley are in. But I'm working through things as quickly as possible. But the Regional Schools Commissioner, it doesn't sit within the local authority. So we're calling a meeting. We've got a meeting, waiting for a meeting date with the Regional Schools Commissioner as soon as possible.
So we don't have any dates yet?
Not yet. But what I have said is I am well aware of the timely manner in which this needs to be done, and if necessary, we will call an extraordinary Cabinet meeting to bring this back for a Cabinet decision.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you for that, and thank you for coming in. It's 5 to 12. Thanks, Alex. And will you come back again and tell us how it goes?
I'll be happy to.
Brilliant. We shall be vacating the studio now and cleaning up and cleaning down, so to speak, and making way for the Curries. They're here in just two ticks.